For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. Let me root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Let's Get Two, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
And welcome to Let's Get To. I am your host, James Christopher, and we have a great episode for you today. Jeff Lance, the Senior Director of Communications for Minor League Baseball, is here. We have the Omaha Storm Chasers as our team of the week. We'll be diving into the past of the San Francisco Seals for our Raiders of the Lost Diamond segment. And you might have heard and or noticed the new version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game by the band On Holiday. Hope we thank them for doing the song. And we highly recommend you check them out on social media, and we'll put the links to some of their accounts at the bottom of the description of this podcast. So it is a packed show for all manner of baseball fans. All manner of baseball fans. If you've grown up watching this game since the 60s, or if you stumbled onto your first Major League Baseball game during the really exciting ALCS of 2019. And I say that to preface what I want to talk about today. And I'm going to fully give credit to the good folks over at the Twitter account Before the Pitch for talking about gatekeeping when it comes to fandom. Now, I want you to know that I'm one of the first people that can be guilty of this, of essentially criticizing someone who is new to the game of baseball. And I've talked about it before, mostly before the show really started, but like how frustrating it is to watch Astros fans who didn't become Astros fans really till 2015 to 2017. They were football fans, so they watched the game that way. And I get frustrated with them because they don't understand the game. They don't understand that, you know, a four-game losing streak in the middle of the summer doesn't really mean a whole lot of anything, generally speaking. I am guilty of criticizing some of those fans for freaking out over small sample sizes and wanting managers fired because they were under 500 in the month of August. And I would look down from my throne of supremacy at how much smarter I am than they are when it came to the game of baseball. I was often guilty of that. I am one of those guys that wears the fact that I have been a fan since I was born, but let's be honest. If, you know, I made a cognitive decision to say that baseball was going to be my first sports love when I'm 8 years old or something, 1984 or something like that, you know? So I have 35 years at least of saying baseball is my very first favorite sport for that many amount of years. And I wear that as some kind of, at times I can wear that as some type of badge of honor. And that is so misguided. We need to, as baseball fans, be welcoming to anybody that wants to be a fan of the game we love. I firmly believe that baseball fandom is executed differently. Baseball, I think, is a more complicated sport than basketball or football. I think that there's a lot more nuance involved. You do need to understand. You need to learn how the intricacies of the game work. But we shouldn't close off new people that come to the game that want to learn. And I think especially when you look at, for as much as Major League Baseball is reporting record revenue with TV contracts and things like that, attendance is down. It just is. And so we have to get past this idea that we criticize people that are new to the game. You know, again, and I say this knowing that I am guilty of all of this, and I do my best to try not to be that guy. But I am the guy that mocks the dude on Twitter when he refers to the manager as coach. Should we mock that dude, or should we explain? Well, actually, in baseball, it's called a manager, and then the coaches are the ones like the hitting coach, the bench coach, da 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 da. And it's something that I'm really glad that Before the Pitch did a video on it, and I'll link to their Twitter account. You can go find it, because I do think that it begs saying, and it just goes back to so much about what the premise of the show is. Baseball is this great thing, and it is the greatest game ever invented, in part because fans stick with it, fans grow. But the pace of the game and the frequency of the games allows you to bring new fans in. It's the greatest game ever invented, even though Major League Baseball is probably one of the worst run, most corrupt Major League organizations. But it is the love of fans that keep that thing going. We shouldn't turn it into this exclusive club that only if you've been here for X amount of years do you somehow get the right to say something and to shout down anybody that's new. And this goes for all fandoms. It goes for all fans of all baseball teams. And, you know, we live in this utter nastiness that really has had a magnifying glass put on it over the Astros sign stealing thing. And, you know, I have seen Astros fans be absolute assholes to other people on Twitter. And I've seen other fans be absolute assholes to Astros fans on Twitter. And where does it end up? I'd like to think it ends up where people are laying awake at night and they're mad, or maybe they feel bad for kind of being an asshole out of their way, going out of their way to do it. So my hope is that we can just decide that, you know what, maybe the way to do it is just be a little nicer. And if somebody says something that you agree with that isn't necessarily a personal attack, just let it go. And that if people are new to the game and don't understand all the intricacies, if they refer to a run as a point, or again, they call the manager a coach, rather than be closed off and make them not want to be a part of this beautiful game, maybe instead go the other way and be an example of, hey, you know what? Really, it's called a run, not a point. But we're really glad that you're enjoying baseball. And I know that's pie in the sky, but the way I figure it, the whole premise of this baseball podcast of having a fan experience based show, that's pie in the sky anyway. So again, I know that the people listening to this show, at least the ones that have reached out to me, are the diehard fans. They are the ones that are, you know, can speak of their baseball fandom in decades. Shout out to Stu Clary. But I also know, in many ways, it's preaching to the choir, because guys like Stu, or guys like, you know, our Dodgers fan Alex, have been some of the best examples of how to reach out and talk baseball across fandoms. But, you know, for now, we have a great episode, so stick with us.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Team of the Week.
We are excited to welcome our team of the week this week. It's the Omaha Storm Chasers. The Omaha Storm Chasers are one of our favorite teams here on the show. We had them on last year. We're excited to have them on again this year, in part because they are the subject of the movie 50 Summers. Last week, we had director Dan Napoli on, and I highly recommend checking out 50summersmovie.com to find out where you can see what I think is one of the best baseball documentaries, period. If you want to know why we love minor league baseball, it's why so many people love it. Highly recommend checking out that film. You can get it on iTunes right now for just $7.99. And so we're excited to continue our focus on the Omaha Storm Chasers and welcome the brand new GM, Lori Schlendler, to the show. Lori, how's it going?
It's going well today.
So tell me a little bit about, first of all, congratulations on the new position, and just a little bit, how did you get into baseball and end up in the front office of a minor league baseball team in the first place?
Well, you know, I was, not really looking for this gig. I had some part-time work I was doing, and a friend of mine, she knew that I did consulting. I'm an accountant. I'm a CPA by trade. And she knew I was doing that kind of thing for people, and she called me and she said she was retiring, and she asked if I would be interested in taking this over. And, you know, I've been a huge baseball fan my whole life. So I started here part-time as just like an accounting consultant. I would just come in and do their financials every month. And before I knew it, it was kind of just kept growing and growing and growing. And our current, not our current, but the ownership group before this one, they actually offered me a full-time job in 2008 as a controller. And from there, I just kept, you know, kind of getting more opportunities, and ended up being the assistant general manager for several years. And then last October, I was promoted to the VP general manager, mainly because, you know, we added a USL soccer team, and we had a few things going on here. So we kind of just elevated a few people here to kind of take care of things. So it's a busy time here in Omaha. We've got some great things going on.
I imagine so. And again, congratulations. One of the it's weird because, you know, you were part of that film 50 Summers, which we've had the producer and director on the show. And so I feel like I kind of have been a Storm Chasers fan all my life. But, you know, on April 14th, my hometown Round Rock Express are rolling into Warner Park. And so what can we look forward to this season out there?
We got a lot of good things going on. We're focusing on having some fun. We got the potholes that came, you know, last year we had a smash promotion with the Omaha potholes. We are having potholes episode 2 this year, Attack of the Cones.
Oh no, I can't. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's on the 19th of April. It'll be a fun night. We'll honor the road workers that after a long winter here in Nebraska, you know, they get tired and beat down. And so we give some tickets to them and they come out, and it should be fun this year. We got some fun things going on. And then shortly after that, we're going to have a really, really cool Darth Maul Star Wars jersey, on May 2nd. That's a big night for us. Then on June 6th, we got Runza night. I don't know if you've ever had a Runza. It's a local favorite sandwich here in Nebraska.
I haven't.
They have a kind of a retro looking, kind of like the Expos used to wear on the hat. And they got like the old striped Astros type jersey going on. It should be pretty cool. And then it just keeps going on and on. You know, we got a Bubba Fett bobblehead we're giving away on May 15th for Bubba Starling, who played for us for several years. And then we're doing a Mondesi, Raul Mondesi bobblehead. And we're doing a Nicky Lopez bobblehead this year on July 10th would be his bobblehead. And he, you know, he's a local favorite. He didn't play here a long time because he got moved up to the big leagues pretty quickly. But he, you know, he went to Creighton University. We got a lot of fans from that. So that'll be a popular night, giving away Nikki's bobblehead. So, but the kicker this year, I think we got two really, really good fun nights. On June 20th, we're going to do Imaginary Friend Night, where all imaginary friends will get in free. Probably will break an attendance record that night, I'm guessing.
You will. That is so amazing. And I'm going to be honest. We interview about 40 teams a season going on. This is the first time I've ever heard of this. This is amazing.
We're still sketching in the details of it.
The extra capacity will be a problem, I'm sure.
Yeah. We gotta figure it out, you know. It should be fun. And then at the end of the season, we're doing something that people are telling us will definitely regret. On August 31st, we're having for all those cat lovers out there, we're having Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Meowt is spelled M-E-O-W-T. Bring some cats out, see how they react. I don't know. It could go really, really good, or it could go really, really bad. I don't really know about that one. So.
Definitely going to have to follow up with you guys on how Take Me Out to the Ball Game goes.
Yeah, the Humane Society. The Humane Society. They warned us that perhaps that wasn't a good idea, but we're doing it anyway. So we'll see how it works.
As long as it's not a doubleheader and Bark in the Park nights that same day, that could be rough. Yeah. One of the things that I was super excited to read was on June 5th. You're having Superwoman Night. And so it's, you know, for you comic nerds out there, it's Wonder Woman, Captain Marvel, Batgirl. I'm a father of a daughter who loves nothing more than going to a ball game. So I love stuff like that. So where did that specific idea come from?
Well, we have like a group of people that we get together at the end of the season. Like last year, we got together at the end of the season and, you know, all of us have great ideas during the season. We'll say like, oh, we should do this next year, or we should do this next year. And so at the end of a season, we all get in a room and we kind of write those all down. And it kind of came out of a brainstorming session that, you know, that the superheroes are really, really, really popular. And so we have several this year. We actually have a girls focused one, and that's on our Girl Scout night. So that'll be Girl Power Night in the ballpark. And then we have a Heroes and Villains one on Boy Scout Night. So that'll be kind of more focused on villains, some of the nefarious ones that we don't always celebrate. So right. That should be fun, too. And, you know, the Boy Scouts come out and they camp out on the field after the game. And it should be a lot of fun for them. So.
Well, that sounds like it's all going to be just an absolute blast. Lori, thanks again so much for being on Let's Get Two, and we cannot wait to circle back at the end of the season and see how it went.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Raiders of the Lost Diamond, a look into baseball's past.
And this week on Raiders of the Lost Diamond, we are going to be focusing on some SEALs. The San Francisco SEALs, to be more specific. The SEALs were charter members of the PCL, which launched back in 1903, and they played in the league until 1957. The organization was named for the abundant sea lion and harbor seal populations in the Bay Area. They started playing their games in Recreation Park until 1906, when an earthquake destroyed it mid-season. And in 1931, the SEALs moved into their very own stadium, SEAL Stadium. SEAL Stadium was unusual that it boasted three clubhouses, one for the visitors, one for the SEALs, and one for the San Francisco Missions, another minor league team that was essentially the tenants of the SEALs from 31 to 37. The SEALs celebrated their inaugural year at SEAL Stadium by winning the PCL pennant in 1931. And the following year, SEALs outfielder Vince DiMaggio arranged a tryout for his younger brother, Joe. And in 1933, Joe DiMaggio hit safely in 61 straight games, which was foreshadowing his 56-game hit streak for the Yankees. In 1945, Paul Fagan bought a controlling interest in the SEALs with the idea of making the PCL a third Major League Baseball league. It didn't actually work out, even though he spent thousands of dollars upgrading SEAL Stadium to what he thought Major League standards would be. He hired former major leaguer Lefty O'Doul, a native of San Francisco and a fan favorite, as the manager. While the SEALs won the pennant in 1946, subsequent teams under Fagan's watch did not fare as well, typically finishing second or third in the division. And then rival clubs didn't buy into Fagan's major league ambitions, and rather they established working affiliations with major league teams and ended up doing a lot better than the SEALs, who were independent at the time. When it was announced that the Giants would move to San Francisco for the 1958 season, the SEALs were forced to relocate themselves and move to Phoenix. In their history, the SEALs went from being independent to affiliated and back again. When they were affiliated, they were often affiliates of the New York Giants, the Brooklyn Dodgers, the New York Yankees, and the Boston Red Sox. Notable alums from the SEALs include Joe DiMaggio, Buck Weaver, made famous or infamous for the Chicago Black Sox, and Frankie Malzone. They won titles in 1909, 1915, 1917, 1922, 23, 25, 28, 1931, 35, 1943, 44, 45, 46, and then 1957. So even though the Seals are gone and the Giants have been in San Francisco for longer than most of the people listening to this podcast's lifetimes, you can still see a little bit of Seals history. All you need to do is go north to the Tacoma Rainiers. Cheney Stadium has several pieces from Seal Stadium still in use, including some of the stadium lights.
This just in, news from Minor League Baseball.
One of the things I like about minor league baseball is that generally when there's news, more often than not, it's good. And, you know, with baseball and the major league side being so consumed with bad news, particularly with my local hometown nine, it's always nice to see something that kind of reminds you of what baseball is about, what's good about baseball, and what's super exciting to make you feel good about the sport and the direction the sport's going. Baseball's for everyone. Baseball, anytime baseball becomes more inclusive, I think it's super exciting to celebrate that. And it's one of the reasons why I started this podcast is I want to talk about all the great things that are happening in the sport. And so we were super excited to get the opportunity to talk to Maura Sheridan about her new role as the voice of the Lynchburg Hillcats. Maura, how's it going?
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
And first of all, congrats on the gig. I know, like, having been doing the show following minor league baseball, it's a big deal to get your first play-by-play gig or to get an upgraded gig. So that's such an awesome thing for you. So congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. I've been in baseball a couple of years now, but this is the first time I get to kind of run the show. So I'm really excited.
So talk to me a little bit about, you know, how you got interested in baseball in the first place and why broadcasting?
Well, I've always been interested in sports, period. I played them growing up. That was really how I met the bulk of my friends when I was younger. And I think it's a great way for kids to just kind of gain confidence, gain just so many important skills in life. So that was something that was always pushed by my family to just get involved. Even if we weren't the best at them, they just wanted us to try them out. And so I tried out basically every sport you could try out and ended up playing field hockey, basketball, and lacrosse in high school. And, you know, that was a great experience. So again, I was always pretty sporty and, you know, didn't end up playing in college and wasn't good enough to play at Syracuse, which is where I went. And I just figured the second best thing was to talk about sports for a living. And I'd always been, you know, pretty talkative and I loved watching sports. I grew up on Boston sports, which I know is people have opinions on that, but I grew up loving them. So I was
Maura.
Yeah.
I'm an Astros fan. I'm living in people's opinion sports hell right now. So
I know.
Don't worry about it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Red Sox might be same spot soon. So I'm trying to distance myself from that topic for now. But yeah, I mean, it's rough sometimes bringing that up, especially in the Carolina League with the Red Sox being a topic a lot. But I, you know, just always love Boston sports. So it's just it seemed like a natural transition for me. But it definitely was a surprise, I think, to a lot of people, basically because it's not something that you think about as a job. And the only reason I stumbled across it was because I happened to go to Syracuse for journalism, realized I wanted to broadcast journalism, and that's how it kind of came about.
That's like the story of my life, right? So I graduated from UT with a film degree much later in life because I thought to myself in high school, well, people don't do that for a job. And it's the same thing with that. So and I've kind of discovered this minor league baseball thing later in life. I grew up in Houston, like I said. So I'm 43 going, oh, these missed opportunities. I could have had a blast. Anyway, this is not my therapy session. So we'll leave mom alone for a while. So, you know, well, who were some of your broadcasting heroes, though? Like, who were some people that you recalled listening to growing up that kind of maybe influenced you?
Well, I mean, it can be kind of hard to pick that out, frankly, because I think sometimes I wasn't thinking about being a play-by-play broadcaster because – there's just not that many women doing it. So I immediately thought of being a sideline reporter, which is something that I do a lot and like doing. But that was always who I looked up to. I mean, I think Doris Burke has been the most influential person just in terms of what she's able to do. Basketball is one of my favorite sports. I love talking about it. And what Doris Burke does and how she commands the mic and has earned a lot of respect from people in the game. I mean, I think NBA players
love her maybe more than anyone else. And I think that is so impressive. So I've always loved her. I really love Beth Moens. She's a Syracuse grad as well. So we have a nice little connection there. And she's been really supportive of me ever since I was in college. And I love listening to her, especially softball. She's really found her element on ESPN with softball. So I think that's another person that I love listening to. People like Maria Taylor and Holly Rowe, I think they're just aces. They're incredible. I mean, there's so many people that I look up to, but I would say Beth Moens specifically has been really helpful and just a really great person to learn from early in my career.
So you mentioned that there are not a lot of women play-by-play announcers, and that's mm-hmm. and what's weird in the life of the show is we've sort of stumbled into having Melanie Newman on the show, mm-hmm. Emma Tiedemann, and now you. Do you carry that with you, knowing that there's now going to have the possibility of a young woman that's going to listen to you and think that's something I want to do when I grow up? Does that factor in at all when you think about going about your day-to-day job?
It doesn't factor in day to day. I think there are these moments where you sometimes realize that you're having more impact than you thought. At University of Vermont, where I do women's basketball, we have young girls on my broadcast. It's happened twice now. And I think it kind of hits me then that maybe this could shape how they decide. And one of the young girls I had told me that she's thinking about going to Syracuse now. And so all of that is really amazing for me. The most important thing I try to do is I obviously realize there's a little more pressure with how I need to handle myself. So I try to be professional and I try to not make it all about me, not make it about being a woman, but just go in there and do my job as well as possible while also realizing that there are people looking up for me and that's or to me. So I think that's really all that you can do. If you get in your head too much about it, I think you just put so much unnecessary pressure on yourself. We're not saving the world. We're just doing something that we love. And that's all that we can do. And as long as we do it in the best possible way for us, then I think it's all going to work out.
That's an incredibly frank and honest answer. Okay. I have no follow-up for that. Wow. I'm speechless, which is not something that happens to me very often. I'm a very in-my-head person. When you sit down and you – because the Carolina League – we had the Fayetteville Woodpeckers on, who I know you had a stop there mm-hmm. on your career. We had them on the show, and they obviously came painfully close to winning the Carolina League.
Yes.
last year. Is there a part of you that's like in your head going, oh, like if I get a moment like this, like how do I want my call to be? Do I want to be – am I going to be a person that drives the call or someone that kind of just like lets the play breathe? I mean, have you thought about how you're going to handle some of these big baseball moments that you're going to see?
Well, I think that's another way. I mean, I definitely – I don't want to call myself type A, but I guess I'm type A in a probably a good way. I think sometimes that has a negative connotation, but I want things the way I want things, and I'm a little organized. And, you know, I think you can overthink stuff like that though. And I've never asked Gus Johnson about this, but my favorite call in the history of calls was when University of Vermont men's basketball upset my beloved Syracuse Orange. I was a UVM fan when I was little. So that's why it was so exciting for me. But he said from the parking lot, and it's just this crazy call. TJ Sorrentine hits a three, and UVM ends up upsetting Syracuse in the NCAA tournament. And I have never asked Gus Johnson about this, but I'm going to guess that was totally natural and totally out of left field for him. And he just said it. And that's how I want my calls to come across, as not planned, as natural, as in the moment as possible. And it can be hard when you're a young broadcaster because you want to plan things out a little bit more. But the more and more experience you get, I think you just let the moment take over and whatever feels best. Like with the Jose Altuve home run, this year, you're going to let that breathe because it was absolutely insane. You're not going to over talk in that moment. And I think that comes with experience. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm not ready to make a Joe Buck-esque call yet, but I'm hoping that it comes a little more naturally when the time comes.
I was going to say, could you please call Joe Buck and tell him that next time? But so one of the things that's very similar, like with my career in independent film and with minor league baseball, is you got a lot of hats to wear. It isn't just mm-hmm. being play by play. What else will you be doing for the Hillcats this year?
Media relations, that's a big part of it. Just getting involved in the community, talking to everyone in the media, sending out press releases, stuff like that, which I'm pretty comfortable doing. It's what I helped out with in Fayetteville last year. So that's kind of the bulk of it. In fact, it's kind of more work than your actual broadcast. Well, I'll put together lineups and stat packs and game notes, which is a lot of work as well. And game notes is really something that you do for yourself to prepare for the broadcast, but you also are doing the other broadcaster a solid by putting those together as well. And they do the same for you. So that's kind of how that goes. I mean, it is a ton of work. I'm sort of used to it, but this will be the first time that I've done 140 games. So I'm slowly getting there, and this will be the first full season of just me on the mic. So it's going to be a lot, but I'm really excited.
Well, we're looking forward to listening to you. Have you reached out to any of your other broadcasters for like tips or ideas of how to manage that 140 game spread, like, I don't know, tea with lemon or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah. I've actually gotten some suggestions of orders to get at Starbucks. really specific orders that people say change their lives. So that's one thing that has definitely been brought up a lot, is you're going to need coffee, you're going to need different snacks to have. And I think the best advice I got, though, is in year one, keep it as simple as possible. Don't get in over your head. And I learned this last year as well. Just every once in a while, just do something for yourself. You know, just take a breath and realize this moment isn't going to happen again. You're never going to get a chance to be 23 again. So just live that way and realize that it's important, but it's not the end of the world. So I think the biggest thing I'm going to try to do is not burn out, be as positive and keep it really simple in year one. And then, you know, maybe in year two, start adding some more stuff. But I'm just trying to, you know, get started and get all of that handled. But I'm really, really pumped to be in Lynchburg because I've heard great things about that place.
Well, that was, I think, a great way to end it. She is Maura Sheridan, the new play-by-play announcer for the Class A affiliate of the Cleveland Indians, the Lynchburg Hillcats. Maura, can we have you on at the end of the season and see how it went?
Yeah, hopefully with a ring, right?
Hopefully with a ring. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being on Let's Get To.
Thank you.
On deck, the Let's Get To interview of the week, brought to you by Fine Line Sportswear.
And we're excited to welcome for our interview of the week, Mr. Jeff Lance. Jeff is the Senior Director for Communications for Minor League Baseball. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Good, Jim. Thanks for having me.
So we are, just over a month away from the first pitch of 2020. So are you excited, or are you still kind of dealing with so many things?
There's a lot going on, still getting ready for opening day, but it's always, you know, that it's an exciting time of year. There's no doubt about it. It's, you know, we always know the workload's going to pick up this time of year. So it's nothing that we're not ready for, but it's always great, you know, especially down here in Florida, we've got spring training going on, so we can sneak out to games on the weekends and, you know, just get the juices flowing for the minor league season to start.
I'm making my first trip out to spring training in a couple of weeks. Actually, we're going to go to West Palm and then also do a game in Jupiter. And I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's, I actually haven't been to the West Palm Park yet, but Jupiter's a nice one. You got a couple teams there, and I've always thought it's pretty cool the way they do that with the multi-team complexes. So you can get a look at a couple of teams, and, you know, it's just a nice setup for the fans.
So it was a really busy off season for minor league baseball. And I don't know, as you know, I kind of came to this and fell in love with it relatively late, but it seemed like we had a lot of rebrands. Was it more than a typical year, or was it about on par for what we've seen lately?
It's maybe a couple of more new ones this year, but you know, there's been a few rebrands that, you know, about four or five of those a year. And I think we had four rebrands this year, and then a couple of new teams in Wichita and Rocket City. So obviously those are going to be new names. And, you know, Wichita adding the Wind Surge, it'd be a nice ballpark there. And it's good to have baseball back in Wichita. It's a nice baseball town. And, you know, they've always had the National Baseball Congress World Series there. It's a big thing in the summer there, and they're going to have some of those games at the Wichita ballpark and some of them over at Wichita State. So baseball will be making a nice return to Wichita this summer. And obviously the Rocket City Trash Pandas in Madison, Alabama, it's right outside of Huntsville, kind of getting back into that market again. So we're going back to a couple places that we've been before, and you know, some facility issues led to teams leaving there. And it's nice to get those teams back in the fold with the minor leagues. And you know, obviously the Trash Pandas have a pretty unique logo and name and all that, but they've been doing quite well on the merchandise front and on the ticket sales front. So, you know, everybody's excited about it there, and that's always a good thing. And hopefully they'll have a nice year there. You know, I guess some of the rebrands we had, hope I don't forget anybody, but I know Fort Myers down here in Florida is now the Mighty Muscles. You know, it's an interesting one. I know Kannapolis changed from the Intimidators to the Cannonballers up there in North Carolina. So they're building a new ballpark there, which would be a nice downtown look there, and you know, really freshen up that franchise. Connecticut Tigers have switched to the Norwich Sea Unicorns. So that's another interesting name, but
yeah, and a great logo look too. That's a great look.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's really cool. And you know, the one that I thought was pretty cool was the Missoula Paddleheads. You know, it's a pretty good look. You know, and it's an interesting name. You know, I guess my personal way to decide if I like a team name or not is to give it the radio call or the telephone test. So if it's, you know, you're calling, you're listening to Paddleheads Baseball on 1460 KXTK, or thank you for calling the Missoula Paddleheads. How can I direct your call? You know, it's some of the names we've had over the years are, they don't really pass my sniff test, I guess, when it comes right to those two ways to check a team name. But you know, most of these ones are pretty good this year. So it's, you know, some people like them, some people hate them, but they, you know, they all seem to be very popular so far.
So it leads to a couple of different questions I have then. So let's talk about the some people hate them, some people don't, because I feel like I've gotten into – I've actually had a couple of teams reach out to me because I've been sort of vocally defending them on social media. It always seems like in a lot of communities, the initial reaction – people react before they have time to let it really sink in, and then it always grows on them. It seems like the Sod Poodles, for example, last year, they hated it at first, and now they love it. Is that something that you guys watch from the communications department, or do y'all just kind of let that thing go?
We tend to let it go, at least from my department. Now, licensing might tell you a different story, but you know, it's these teams put a lot of effort into coming up with these names and what the significance is to their town. And, you know, Las Vegas Aviators is a good example. You know, everybody liked the name, but when they released the logo, you know, there was a lot of criticism. But I think, you know, as the season went along and the merchandise was released, and the, you know, the logo was, I thought was pretty cool, you know, with the pilot and the helmet and all that. And I tell you, I was out in Vegas for a couple of days to watch some games, and there were a lot of people walking around with that logo on. So, you know, it always I take the social media criticism with a grain of salt, because a lot of the, you know, a lot of the people that will comment on social media are the people that have a negative impression of it. You know, the people that like it, they're not going to get online and say, "Ooh, I love it. It's great." You know. But the people that don't like it are the ones that will always jump on social media and say, "Oh, this is awful." So kind of take it with a grain of salt, I guess.
Yeah. Well, brother, I'm an Astros fan. I know all about how social media can get crazy right now. So my wife is like making me stay off. So
yeah, it's that's been a pretty incredible case study, I guess, if you will, on social media and handling public relations disasters and all kinds of stuff, man. Yeah. It's, there's a lot of people learning a lot of lessons on this one, that's for sure.
We had a guest on last week who said the Astros need a new public relations department. My first response was, the Astros have a public relations department? Because it doesn't show. back to some of these new teams. So, you know, you'd mentioned being really excited to have the Wichita and the Wind Surge back in Wichita, have baseball back. Mm-hmm. So when teams want to move and they want to like relocate, mm-hmm. So how much of a play do y'all have in that, saying, hey, here's a market that would be good? Or is it like, is it treated like any other small business where they have the opportunity to kind of just go where they want to go?
There's a process that has to be followed. They have to file an intent to relocate forms. And they also have to do an exploration, form that they have to fill out and saying that, hey, we want to, you know, we're in New Orleans. For whatever reason, we've decided we need to try and move the club and we'd like to explore the Wichita market. So then they'll talk to their league office. So the Pacific Coast League office has to approve that. And usually if it's not anywhere near another team's market, there's usually not any problem with exploring a territory. But in some cases, if you're, say 30 miles away from an existing team, you're going to need to get permissions from that other league if there's another league involved, and obviously that other team who's, you're kind of coming into their territory as well. So there's definitely a process that goes into it. And then, once those applications are approved, then you can move forward with trying to find a location for a ballpark, funding for a ballpark, et cetera. So it's a lengthy process for sure.
So, we're looking at 2020 and for people that are, hopefully if people are listening to the show understand at least a little bit of what minor league baseball has to offer. What are some of the things we can look forward to this season? It just seems like with a mixture of new teams, and it looks like there's some rivalries being built, particularly in my state with the Missions and the Express really playing that up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some things we can really look forward to this season?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of cool what some of those teams have done down there with the Astros, and having these preseason exhibition games with prospect teams. So that seems to be kind of something that's taking place more and more frequently. It's a great concept. It gives fans a chance to see who's coming next, who's going to be on your team this year, and maybe see some of the guys that were there previously. So I find those games pretty cool. And it's great to see some of these teams like Amarillo that just got started last year already hosting an All-Star game there this year. That's a lot of work after you've, it's a pretty exhausting year to open a franchise and a new ballpark, and then to turn around and be willing to host an All-Star game and all the effort that goes into that. Some teams are not willing to, bite off the amount of energy and effort it takes for an All-Star game after being settled for 10 years, nonetheless doing it the next year. So,
right. Yeah.
And then you see a lot of the teams, we're going to have another, I think it's 22 teams in the Copa de la Diversión program. Obviously those have been a huge hit in places like San Antonio and Round Rock, and throughout the Southwest really. It's a great program. It's exposing minor league baseball to a lot of new fans. And we're really excited about topping the 90 team mark on that for this year. So, there's a lot to be excited about. Obviously everybody gets excited about the prospects that are coming to town and whether you're getting a look at Mackenzie Gore in Amarillo or, whoever the guys are, it's always fun to look and see where those guys are going to end up and check the rosters on opening day to see who's going to be on which team. I grew up going to games up in the Midwest League and we couldn't wait to get the opening day rosters in Baseball America because we, back then that was the only way to get them and
right.
figure out who was going to be coming to town when. So it's always, as a baseball fan, it's always a good, exciting time of year. There's a couple other things that a handful of us are looking forward to seeing. It sounds like Florida State League, they're going to use the automated balls and strikes
system okay.
that cool. they had in the Atlantic League last year and the Arizona Fall League. Since most of the Florida State League clubs are playing in the spring training stadiums, they've got the TrackMan and the Hawkeye system in there. So a lot of the technology that's needed to do that is already in place there. So, I think you'll see that in the Florida State League this year. And then, I think there's there's a handful of other experimental rules that haven't been finalized yet, but they'll take place in the lower levels of the minor leagues. You won't see them in AAA or AA, but possibly the complex leagues, Gulf Coast League, Arizona League, and maybe the Dominican Summer League. So we'll see how those all shake out, but those are things that MLB is considering and have kind of given us a heads up on that, you know, these may be in the works for this year.
I know that I'm just stoked about it. Like I was just looking at my agenda and I'm going to be going to games in Buffalo and Rochester, Lexington and Louisville, and then Eugene, Stockton. I mean, this is going to be a really busy travel year. And I think that's what makes minor league baseball so special is you're going to see all kinds of areas of the country just by going to these games.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I might be taking the same trip you are. I know the Midwest League, for example, the Midwest League All-Star Game is in Bowling Green. So I get out my minor league map and see that, all right, you know, you got Lexington right there. You've got Louisville, Indianapolis. You know, all those clubs are an easy drive from Bowling Green. So, I'm a baseball junkie. So I'll figure out who's got home games. And, you know, if you're lucky, you can catch a 1 o'clock day game somewhere and then a 7 o'clock game an hour and a half away in some other town. So, in fact, I was up till about 2 o'clock last night in the morning just because I got a, you know, trying to plan a Pioneer League trip just to go. I haven't been to the Pioneer League other than Missoula yet. So I love getting the schedules out and seeing who's, you know, who's got a day game here where I could get to a night game there and see how many parks you can see in 4 or 5 days. It's always a fun trip.
Yeah, we're excited because we're gonna do the California League All-Star Game in Stockton after seeing, you know, San Jose and all of that fun stuff. And it's really just, we can't wait to get out there.
Yeah. And that game's had some good players in the last couple of years. I was out there last year and they had Jeter Downs and Mackenzie Gore were in that game. And Helio Ramos from the Giants. So they had some really good prospects in the Cal League game. And it's usually a good one.
Well, Jeff, you know, just want to thank you so much again for taking your time to be on the show. It really means a lot to us.
No problem. Anytime. Happy to do it.
All right, we'll talk to you guys. We'll talk to you a little bit down the road then. Thanks for being on Let's Get To.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
So that does wrap up this episode of Let's Get To. I want to thank Jeff Lance. I want to thank the Omaha Storm Chasers for being on this week. Had a great time doing some research on the San Francisco Seals. And, you know, my public service announcement as we wrap up is, you know, we are heading, it is Tuesday. That means tonight, probably in your town, there's college baseball happening. And there's nothing better than a Tuesday afternoon game in March. You know, you're waiting for the Major League and Minor League baseball seasons to start. Go watch college baseball. Fall in love with the Ping. The Astros hosted an excellent tournament this past weekend at Minute Maid Park. You saw a pair of no-hitters against each other going into the eighth inning. You saw massive comebacks and crazy games all at the college level, played by players that are struggling and doing their best to get noticed they can get to the show. So go watch some college baseball. Fall in love with the Ping. You'll have a great time. I will be out at Dish Falk a lot this year down here in Austin, Texas. So we'll be back this week to talk a little bit of Chicago Cubs spring training, and we're going to talk some Brewers spring training. It's going to be a good time. So see ya on Friday. And until then, let's get to it.